right. Well, welcome everybody to our Healing Story Alliance teleconference, April 20th, 2016. We have Reggie Carpenter. I'm very excited. I have not seen Reggie perform a lot, but the times that I have, it's been her wonderful family stories that have just been so deep and so humorous at the same time. So I'm really excited about this. And also, I have her CD called I See the Moon, which is a very sweet songs and stories for children who experienced some loss. And she's got a whole lot of wonderful CDs on her website, which you can check out. Reggie, what is your website address? For some reason, it's not here on the, it's usually right on the, on our list.
Can it's really it hard loud? To remember. Yeah, it's hard to remember. ReggieCarpenter.com.
Get it. Great. So Reggie, in case you aren't familiar with her, is a wonderful storyteller. She's a professor. She's a performance coach, and I think what she's performed all over the place. She won the J.J. Renault Emerging Artist Award and all kinds of other awards and Storytelling World Awards and Parents' Choice Awards. I read some not too long ago that Reggie was offering some workshops on over the internet on how to manage anxiety that comes with performing and how to be able to express yourself with more confidence, not just physically, but get your voice out there. And that sounded so intriguing that I asked her if she would like to come in and share with us. So
Hi, I'm sorry to interrupt. They told me I should announce myself. I'm Will Fritzmeyer. I just came on. Sorry.
Oh, hi, Will. Great.
Hi, welcome. Welcome, Will.
For now, Will, everybody is star 6 to mute, and then Reggie will let you know when you can unmute, okay? All righty. Good. So without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to Reggie. I'm going to mute myself, and I'm really so happy you're here, Reggie. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Alyssa. Can everyone hear me okay? I have it on speaker. Oh, you're on mute, so that
you
always makes a little better when it's... Hey, everybody. Does that sound okay? Oh, good. So before we begin, I know it's 9 o'clock here in Ithaca, where I live, and it's been a long day. And some of you may have just been getting off of work if you're on the West Coast. So why don't we just take a moment to ground ourselves again in this day. And closing your eyes, feeling your feet on the floor, taking a deep breath, and release the day through your mouth. Allow your shoulders to fall and feel the softness in your belly. I thank you so much for making time to come to this teleconference and also for making time for yourself. Creativity needs attention in order to flourish. So I'm grateful that you are bringing your attention here tonight. And when you're ready, take in a breath and release it. This teleconference is going to be, it's taken off of my six-week course called Living Out Loud. Living Out Loud was concerned itself with looking at the ways that fear and anxiety, shame, and feelings of inferiority prevent us from speaking our stories, whether they're funny or tragic or crisis-driven or just humorous anecdotes. It's fear that so often silences us. So during my 6-week course, I decided to take a look at what fear is and the many faces and voices that fear can appear in my own life. And then trying to make a relationship with fear. So tonight, that's what I'm going to try to do with us. I'm not really interested in saying that we're going to get rid of fear, because I don't believe we ever will. But what I can do is develop a relationship with fear so that fear is no longer running my creative life and my life in general. So that's what I am planning on doing tonight. Yeah. So, if you didn't get a notebook or something to write in or with, now would be a good time to do that. So I wanted to start with telling you about how I came to really feel the need to teach this course, Living Out Loud. It started quite a while ago, in 2005. My brother Tim was killed in a car accident, and my brother Tim was only 55 years old when he died. And about 3 years ago, I was also turning 55. And I thought, oh gosh, my brother died with so many stories that I never heard. I wish I had heard my brother's stories. And then I thought, I wonder what stories I'm not telling. And I immediately knew which story it was. It was the story of my attempted suicides when I was 16 years old, my commitment to a state mental institution for my entire junior year of high school, what happened to me when I was in the hospital, how I got out of the hospital, and then my relationship to my mother and to that experience that happened for the rest of my life up until my mother's death. I didn't want to tell that story, and in fact, nobody in my family ever told the story. When I decided that I would try to put the story together, I was faced with an overwhelming sense of fear and shame. And I was tremendously frightened to tell the story of that experience. But I also knew that if I never told it, that story would be telling me for the rest of my life. And I wanted to get free. So I decided that I would try to put the piece together and like Judith Black, you know, I love what Judith has said. She's like, how do you write the piece? Book the gig. So I decided that I would try to tell Snap in the Boston's, you know, with Nora and Andrea's big mouth. So I started putting the story together. And it started out as a 5-minute story and has ended up as a 1-hour and 15-minute piece of theater piece. And when I began that piece, I saw myself as someone who was mentally ill and was still mentally ill. I saw myself as someone who was abandoned. I saw myself as someone who had huge defects and needed to stay out of society. I saw myself as unlovable and tainted. And through the course of creating that piece and then performing it, I saw myself as a survivor. I saw myself as someone who was deeply mentally ill but no longer was so. I saw myself as a courageous young woman, and I saw myself as being deeply loved by my parents. So all of those things happened because I was able to find and tell the story. There was no easy road in doing so, however. It took me 2 years to put the piece together. I quit one of my teaching jobs and started to walk dogs. I walked approximately 7 to 10 miles a day with dogs. But what that did was it gave me the freedom to write. I didn't have to take care of any of my students. And during that 2 year process, I really thought that I was going to lose my mind again, because I went back and I asked that question, what happened? How did it happen? And then I tried to find out why. So at the end of the 2 years, I had an hour and 15 piece, and I ended up performing it at the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro in 2014. I was petrified. I thought that everyone would ridicule me. I thought no one would want to come. I thought, oh my God, who wants to hear that story? And I was really frightened that people would look at me now as, she's crazy. When I got there, the tent was overflowing. No one left. And I found that by telling my story, I was being of service to others who couldn't find the words for their story yet. So when I talk about living out loud, it isn't some flamboyant thing that I'm interested in doing. When I talk about living out loud, I'm talking about telling the truth, finding a way to overcome shame and fear so that you can tell the truth about yourself and who you are and who you see yourself to be and how you can be of service to others. All right. Is there anyone who would like to share now on what I just shared? So to unmute yourself, use *6. And if you'd be kind enough to say your name, and then when you're finished, mute yourself again, once again by *6 yourself. Is there anyone who would like to share on what I just shared?
Well, this is Elisa. It's just very moving and so beautiful to hear that you did find the courage and did find the healing to share the story, because it's so important, and there is so much stigma. People mm-hmm. live with mental illness so alone, and I know, you know, I could tell probably a similar story, and I really haven't. So I'm just really excited to hear more about your process.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Okay, let's get cracking. So I want to share with you one of my favorite poems. It's by Rumi. And Rumi writes, "Forget safety. Live where you fear to live. Destroy your reputation. Be notorious." Let's do it again. "Forget safety. Live where you fear to live. Destroy your reputation. Be notorious." So before we can talk about overcoming fear, let's talk about what do we fear. If you have a notebook, and I hope you do, and something to write with, I want you to just jot down now, what are some of the things that you fear? Go ahead and jot those down. I'll give you a minute or so. And then I'm hoping people will feel comfortable sharing some of the things that they fear. All right, I hope you have a few things. Would anyone be willing to share some of the things that you're afraid of, some of the things you fear?
I don't mind.
Great.
This is Will.
Hi, Will.
One of the things, I'm 74 years old, and I was a storyteller back in the 90s and 80s, and I stopped, and I taught school math, middle school. And I'm teaching now in a juvenile prison.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I live in fear of, I guess, is being dismissed or seen as irrelevant when I share something that's important to me.
Yeah.
We all have experiences in our childhood we can draw on. I was a red diaper baby. I don't know if everyone knows what that is. My parents were communists.
Uh-huh.
And it colored a lot of what I did and what I felt and what I thought. I was very proud of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I lived in a kind of shadow world, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
you know, things you couldn't talk about. And so I think I still carry that with me, that sort of fear of A, being found out somehow, or and then being dismissed as irrelevant.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Thank you, Will. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Anyone else?
This is Stephen.
Yeah.
Am I done with it? Am I through it? Am I, can't say over it,
mm-hmm.
so that the fear of practicing therapy on the stage.
Yeah. And what would happen if you did?
I'd abuse my audience.
Uh-huh. And if you abused your audience, what would that mean?
Either one, it's selfish, or two, that there's something about storytelling ethics about, you know, you take your audience somewhere and bring them back safely.
Mm-hmm. So making it, you know, back to me, right? Back to me.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you. So being kind of unprofessional and self-centered. Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else?
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hi. Big fear is failure to deliver what people...
And
the other one is debilitating pain that blocks being able to do what I want to be able to do.
Can you say that again, like debilitating pain?
Yeah, debilitating pain that prevents me from doing things that I really want to get done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anybody else? How about you, Bea? Did you have anything you wanted to share? No. Okay. All right. Well, I'll share with you some of the things that I fear and some of the things that I focused on during Living Out Loud. I fear being ridiculed. I fear people's judgment. I fear failing. I fear being vulnerable. I fear feeling incompetent. I fear being misunderstood. And I fear being shamed. These are the things that I fear. And these are the things that were silencing me when I was trying to write SNAP. Brené Brown says that shame is the intensely uncomfortable feeling that we are unworthy of love and belonging. She posits that shame silences us, that these fears that we have and the shame that we feel when we feel exposed keep us silent, because shame has to live in the silence. So shame is like a mold, and that mold, it can't live when it's exposed to the light. And the only way, the antidote to shame is empathy. Empathy and compassion. So empathy is the ability to look at the world through another person's eyes and see things from their perspective, to walk a mile in their shoes. But it's not just somebody else. It's also being able to look at your younger self through compassionate, empathic eyes and try to see things from a different perspective. So we're going to move into a little part now where you're going to be writing. But before we move forward, is there anyone who would like to share their perspective, their thoughts, or their experience of shame and how that has silenced them in their life? And once again, you would star 6 yourself and then announce yourself, and then we'll go on.
This is Elisa. I'm just responding to something that you said about your fears that rang a bell, that was some of the things I wrote, were times when I have shared a very vulnerable story, mm-hmm. and felt a little bit like, and this could be totally my projection, but that people were feeling like I was sort of unevolved or smart enough, or, you know, I guess partly what Stephen was saying too, just that I hadn't figured it all out and they had to sort of tell me things, or, you know, just an icky, which wasn't, you know, the way what I wanted or needed. So I think that is one fear that I have to confront when I share what feels to me like a finished story, is that people will judge me and feel like mm-hmm. I haven't figured it all out yet, which is, you know, nobody figures it all out. It's a thing to even think, but that right. That's something that causes a lot of shame, that I'm not fully evolved yet. So I guess that has come up in stories, personal stories that I've shared.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's enough said.
I think of that, Elisa, as that I'm not perfect, right? I'm not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And the expectation, there's a huge expectation that we put on ourselves as tellers, that, you know, and rightly so. I mean, we do need to have figured quite a few things out before we're going to share something intensely personal, like SNAP. I mean, it's a, you know, the point made earlier about doing therapy on your audience is certainly a very important consideration for people telling personal stories. But this addiction to perfection, that we've got to be above it all, that we've got to have figured it all out, that we've got to be beyond it and past it. And also the very human desire to fix, right?
Yeah.
So to fix it. Let's get away from it. Let's fix it. Let's be happy. Or whatever. Yeah, that can create a very uncomfortable dynamic. So really, who's in control of the story is part of that question. So, yeah, that's a great point. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wanted to share on their experience of shame or how they've experienced shame in their life or their professional life? The thing running through my mind right now is, oh, they've all got so much shame, they can't even talk about the shame. Anybody? Shall we? Okay. You know what I'm wondering? Do you guys mind unmuting? Would you guys all unmute?
Yep.
Sorry. Tell me how to mute and unmute. I came in late.
That's okay. You mute and unmute in the same way as you just press *6.
*6. That goes both ways.
Yeah, it goes both ways. So I'd like to have a conversation. Is anyone want to share anything around their experience of shame? All right. Well, let's keep going then, okay? I want you to now write a little, I'm going to give you about 3 or 4 minutes and to write a story about how fear has shaped your choices in life. Where has fear stopped you? Where has it silenced you? Where has it sabotaged you? Go ahead and jot down a note. So again, it's where has fear stopped you, silenced you, or sabotaged you? And when you're ready, I'd love to hear from someone. So, who would like to go first? Will, Stephen, B, Mike, Elisa, and Bruce. I don't know from Bruce yet.
Still writing.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Excuse me.
Okay.
Hi, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary. Welcome.
Hi. Been listening, which has been and relevant to your question. The image that came to mind are times of great strength and great courage, and then other times of, and I kind of had, there's faces of strength in my mind, and then at other times there's just faces of fear. And kind of a, you know, the flip side of a coin or something like that. And almost as though the courage to move forward is crushed and can't move through. There we go. I'm keep working with the image, but can't move through the fog to get mm-hmm. to the goal, whatever that goal might be. Mm-hmm. And that probably, that scenario probably plays through in many different episodic kinds of things, you know, situational kinds of things in my life. So it's a great question. It's a great question.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
This is Stephen. The thought that popped in my brain was when I was a younger man,
mm-hmm.
there was a time I wanted to be, I thought I might want to be a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And my spouse at the time said she didn't want to be a preacher's spouse.
Uh-huh.
And the in being sort of still semi-newlywed, fear for the relationship mm-hmm. sort of quelch that desire, urge, or thought. So it's almost like it silenced that
mm-hmm.
word that wanted to get out, perhaps.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
It's kind of similar to what I was writing about, that when I was little, I was the oldest of six cousins, so I was the kind of the chief director of all the plays and dances that we put on, of which there were many. But uh-huh. My cousin, who was 6 months younger, as we became teenagers, started to really resent me and kind of not like me, and I got the idea that if you're too strong, have too much opinion, you won't be liked anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another experience in a dance, big dance workshop where we were in small groups directing things, and I wanted to have a director role, but someone who was more sort of assertive stood up sort of over me and said, no, I'm doing this, and I kind of felt small and that I was seen as not good enough. And so I think experiences like that have caused me to step back some from really speaking my voice and my ideas as much as I would like to.
Mm-hmm.
This is Mike. You there?
Mm-hmm. I'm listening.
Okay.
Hi.
It's not just pure fear. It's that I things that have consequences if I do or if I don't. And there's this inner dialogue. If I do this, it's the right thing, but at the same time, this other thing can happen, which can be hurtful either to me or to somebody else. And that's in situations like confronting a person about something that you know it's wrong for them to do it, but if you confront them, it's going to have payback to you, to me.
Mm-hmm.
So take those risks. The leaving of a bad situation, but what are you leaving behind? And I was just remembering when I was in, I think, seventh grade, I was supposed to go to a dance with somebody, and she couldn't go. And I just felt really bad and anxious and sad, but I went by myself. And going by myself was big risk and really pretty traumatic moment, but I had fun.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
This is Mary again. I love what the gentleman who just spoke to about those internal voices and that, that mind topic and thing that kind of plays back and forth within our minds. But when you had asked the question earlier, a lot of past scripts and the scripts not being good enough, mm-hmm. when in fact you are, but that internal voices, you know, that you're not good enough or the fear of putting yourself out there again.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about that ridicule or that kind of a thing, and but yet it's never real. It's just perceived.
Right. Right. Yeah. One of the acronym about fear that I really love and that I use for myself is false evidence appearing real. It's just false evidence appearing real. And one of the central questions that I'm always asking myself when I'm working on a piece that feels really risky is, you know, well, what would happen? What would happen if you were rejected? What would happen? I mean, what is the difference between what could happen and what you're just will happen and are thinking could happen? You know, and it's
no, and I'm only laughing because. Some of the things that did, I mean, they actually did happen, were quite funny. But I do have to remember that. You know, it's not always catastrophic. Sometimes it's just fun.
Right. Yeah. I'm beginning this conversation here by talking about where has fear silenced you so that you can begin to see that the stories that you wrote down, these might be stories worth investigating, right? Stories worth investigating, stories worth telling. So, what I'm interested in now, and you don't have to share this if you don't want, but of course you can if you would like to, is There are things that we're willing to share about, right? Like, so I'm asking you, where were you shamed, or what did you fear, or tell me a story. But in there might be something that you're not willing to share, right? So for me, what becomes interesting in this process, in this creative process, is, what am I willing to talk about, and what am I not willing to talk about? So sometimes I have to ask myself, and again, referring to my story of SNAP, it was like I don't want to talk about the attendant who used to get, sexually excited when we were getting punished. I don't want to talk about that. I only want to talk about the stuff that I know will be accepted. And whether that makes their way into your story or not, it's really important to be able to speak them to yourself so that you can make a creative decision around, is this something that's critical to my story that I can find a way to artfully share as part of my experience? So what I'm interested in now is having you jot down is were there things that you left out when you talked about it just now? Were there things that you left out? And what might those things have been? Go ahead and write some of those things down now. And if there's anyone who would like to share what they left out, now would be a good time.
It's sort of like, this is Will again.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like group therapy without having to look at anyone.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah, there's something nice about it. There's something nice about it.
Something that has struck me while we've been talking is a fear of being revealed
mm-hmm.
as either inadequate or unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
And in preparing, for example, for a presentation, for a story, whether it's to a group of children or to adults, whatever the venue is, I fear that I'm not prepared enough, that I'm a fake.
Yeah.
And
the imposture, right?
Yeah, posturing. And in mm-hmm. teaching school, I depend a lot more on posturing and entertaining than I do on very careful sequential preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And the same can be said of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of scares me.
Yeah.
This is Stephen. Reggie, when you...
Thank you. Yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
You're
no,
living
go ahead.
Out loud with your story.
Yeah.
You also had to out your family. So you're actually telling their story, or at least your version of their story.
Right, yeah.
With or without their permission. It's mm-hmm. one thing when you're dealing with your own shame, but dealing with somebody else, you know, having to carry mommy dearest type of a story, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Gives one pause.
Well, that's a really great point because in any story, we have to ask who's the main character? Whose story am I telling? You know, whose story am I telling? Whose story do I have a right to tell? Whose story can I tell? And that's always, you know, mine. And so while my parents are certainly in the story and I'm sharing their, you know, I'm sharing what's happening to them through my eyes. There isn't anything in the story that I haven't cleared with them, you know, that I haven't talked to them about, but I want to talk even further than that is that I really believe that every story we tell is about love and connection. And so, and in some stories are about a loss of love and a loss of connection, or a seeking of love and a seeking of connection. And sometimes we find it and sometimes we don't. We call those sad stories when we lose connection or feel a sense of loss of love, and happy stories, you know, when we connect. But every good story has those two dynamics happening within them. And so this idea of I'm certainly not going to be able, I have no authority in telling anyone else's story but mine, and I'm not going to because I believe stories are about love, I'm not going to say anything that will demonize them. The entire thing is built on empathy. And as far as SNAP went, it was really the opportunity for me to look at, you know, to finally understand that my mother, I had held on to this grudge of my mom for so many years, thinking, oh, she just wanted to get rid of me. And it took me all those years to realize that my mother was in a tremendous amount of pain by committing me. And she did it because she loved me and didn't want me to kill myself. And it took me that long to understand that kind of love. So it can be a tangle of worms unless one knows what one's philosophy is. And I know what my philosophy is, that every story is a story of love and connection. And so I went looking for that story. And the entire emotional arc is about me losing that sense and finding it in later, much later in my life, decades later in my life. So I hope that's helpful.
Hey, it is. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Is there anyone else who wants to share on what you've left out?
Well, it's Mike again. That seventh or eighth grader used to get so nervous in facing the person that he wanted to really care for him that that I would stare at my watch and wind it in front of her just as an almost like a nervous tick rather than look her directly in the eye and say what I wanted to say.
Thank you.
That was left out.
So, is there anyone else who'd like to share?
This is Mary again. One of the things I realized that I'm in transcribing old journals in writing my story, I was leaving out, I became a single mother, and in my journaling, I'm journaling about the incision and should I move forward with this birth, and as I'm transcribing it now 30 years later, I'm leaving out that indecision stage because my concern is the hurt that that might for my son. So I'm realizing that I don't really want him to know how hard it was to keep him. And because he's been loved from day one and all of that. So yeah, it's because that just happened recently. So it's just, yes. What did I leave out?
Yeah. Thank you, Mary. Yeah. So I just want to give a little overview up to this point. So in this course, Living Out Loud, and in my own process, what I like to do is I ask myself, all right, what story do I want to tell? That's usually based on what story am I most afraid to tell. That was my central question around SNAP, of course. And then I began to ask myself, well, what am I afraid of? And then through this process of selecting scenes and creating a structure for the piece, I began to say, all right, there are some things that I'm willing to share and some things that I'm not. And some of those are because a story isn't a person, right? A story isn't worth hurting another person to me. And it's certainly not worth losing my family over. But it also was a question of what is my ownership of this experience? And how can I share it in a way that respects me and everybody else and still go into as dark a place as I need to go? So all of those things I'm considering, and that's bringing into our craft, you know, how do I structure this piece? What is my emotional arc? How many emotional arcs are there? How do I move through time and space? What kind of language do I use? How do I hold the space with my body? What kind of relationship am I having with the listener? All of these things, you know. And then I'm also asking myself, what do I want to leave out and why? And I'll give you an example of that. So I had written a scene that had happened between my father, my sister, and myself. And I wrote it as it happened. And I shared it with my sister Mary, and she said, "No way, absolutely no way are you going to tell that." And I said, "All right, I won't." And I redid it so that it was something that happened to me. It was something that was going on for my sister and between my sister and my dad. And so I changed the story so it was still true, but I respected my sister's right to privacy. So I'm using my craft to be sensitive around what I'm sharing and what I'm not sharing. And I'm also aware that my sense of fear and shame are influencing me on what I will and won't talk about, right? Because I still need my privacy too. But then I get to this other place, and this is a place beyond judgment. And up to now, I'm just accumulating memories. And I'm just writing them down, and I'm trying not to have any judgment around them. I'm writing down the things I feel uncomfortable around. I'm writing down the things I feel ashamed of. And then I ask these two very simple questions. And these two questions are the questions that I ask for absolutely every single personal story that I write. And the questions are so simple, but they revolutionized my work. The first one, well, is a statement, is what do you notice? And the second one is, what do you wonder? What do you notice? And what do you wonder? Such simple questions. And the noticings for me are usually, oh, I notice that I keep talking about my therapist. I notice that that my mother came to visit me 10 times. And I'd forgotten that. I wonder why the therapist got me a piano. And through these two simple questions, I then begin to go deeper into the piece. I'm wondering if anyone would like to share anything about any memory that they notice and they wonder. Is anybody there?
Yeah.
We're here. We're stymied.
No.
You're stymied.
I think that's...
just went thinking about the story about my meeting my cousins and things and then being intimidated by someone who's more powerful. But I guess I noticed that I feel comfortable when I feel like I'm the oldest or, you know, have the most power, and that I wonder why I felt like I needed to have power in order to share my creativity.
That's a great question. That's a great question.
I think, this is Will again, that, of course, everyone's different. For me, this goes back to a fear of not taking the time to notice, not looking deeply at either the story that I'm working on or the emotional environment within which I'm working on it, really analyzing what I want to get across, taking myself seriously. Rather than just getting up and yuck, winging it.
Right. Yeah.
This is Elisa just cutting in to let you know that it's 9:59 and we try to end by 10, and I didn't notice the time going by so quickly.
It did go by quickly.
Great. Is there something you wanted to kind of say?
Yes, I wanted to read, yeah. Well, first, thank you all for coming and being open to this experiment. Those two questions, the statement, what do you notice and what do you wonder, allow us to pay attention. And attention is noticing and being with something without trying to change it. Attention takes the time to fully explore and to discover whatever there is to know about something and to watch as things change by themselves without our trying to fix them. Attention is patient and kind. There's no rush and no burden and no criticism in attention. Fear prevents us from paying attention. Fear is trying to distract us. And so when we approach our stories, the ones that bring us the greatest fear, with a sense of attention, what do I notice and what do I wonder? They remove us from judgment, and we can accumulate memories, feelings, sensations, characters, event, and the emotional arc of a story. And then we slowly can put those pieces together and tell those stories, whether we tell them publicly or not. We become free, right? We become free when we're able to tell ourselves our own story. And it's through that sense of attention that our relationship to our story changes. So that's my thought.
So much richness here, Reggie.
Yeah. Thank you.
Very, very generous giving, sharing that you have given us. Wonderful questions and personal sharing. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for everybody for hanging in there with me.
I just want to share, and people can stay on if they want, but I just want to share that our next teleconference is on 5/24, and it's Arthuretta Martin, and she's calling it a Panifest, the journey. And she talks about how the United Nations has declared 2015 through 2025 as the decade of the African. And she says it's time for us to heal from the forced African diaspora. And historically, the United States has constructed understandings of race that have systematically devalued the lives of African-American peoples. Mm-hmm. Arthuretta will discuss the results of sharing stories focused on individual and collective healing from this trauma and through the Pan-African experience. So that's going to be wonderful. I hope you will all come back for that.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Anything else anyone wants to say to Reggie before we sign off?
Just thank you for your time and careful input.
It was very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
So, if anybody wants, but good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.